welcome to the Blazer's Edge podcast. I'm Tara, and today Joe is out, but I have two special guests that I can't wait to talk to today. First, we have friend of the show, sports reporter for the Oregon Sports Beat, and Blazer's Edge contributor, Ashley Williams. Hi, Ashley. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are hanging in there. We're in the middle of a windstorm. Do you two have wind blowing all around?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Well, let me introduce our second guest. Today we have with us college student and play-by-play high school announcer, Sean Phillipson. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tara. Glad to be a part of your podcast.
Glad to have you. And like I said, with the wind swirling all around us, we could lose power at any moment, but we will press forward and see how it goes. Last night, the Trailblazers beat the Timberwolves in a come-from-behind game, which gave them a 1.5 advantage over the Denver Nuggets. So we are still holding on to the eighth spot. Sean and Ashley, I think you were both at the game last night. I watched it from the comfort of my rocking chair at home. How was the atmosphere last night? That was an interesting game because, boy, the first half of that was rough. Sean, what did it feel like in the arena last night?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was rough in that first half or three quarters, however you want to put it in there. But yeah, the Blazers looked off. They looked a little confused, disorganized. The floor spacing wasn't there. And early on, Myers-Leonard, he had some open jump shots from the perimeter, but were missed. And hearing the fans boo him, kind of a no surprise when he's having this kind of a season.
I was pretty shocked. I'm always shocked when I hear booing, and that was no exception. Ashley, did you hear the booing when Myers-Leonard was missing shots?
You guys slightly sound like robots, so I'm trying. I know that it's my service because this storm. I actually was late to the game, like halftime late. Because I'm covering the Nike Hoop Summit this week, so I had to get a story done.
Oh, so you didn't have to watch the first half. You came to the right half.
Right. So I was checking the score, and they were down, and I was like, oh, should I even go? And then we got there, and then it was like a complete turnaround. Allen had such a great night. I'm really proud of him.
Yeah, that was fantastic. But so it sounds like you were, by the time you got there, I don't think Myers-Leonard even got in the game much for the second half. So you probably didn't hear any of the crowd booing him. What do you think about when crowds boo their own players? Sean?
Well, yeah, let me get in with this. Well, like I said, it's a no surprise with how Myers-Leonard is producing right now, just because you're hearing the boos. And when you hear that, bad things happen. So granted that, I mean, he's averaging 5 points per game, 3 rebounds. He's not as efficient, much less consistent, that Blazer fans wanted to see from him. So again, once that happens, you're going to get some boos your way. It happens to any team in the NBA, quite honestly. It happens.
What I really think, and maybe I just have rosy glasses on, but what I think often happens in that case is that people are watching in the arena or they're watching at home, and you know, somebody that you really want to hit a shot misses the shot, and you just kind of groan, and everybody just kind of comes out spontaneously with this disappointed boo, but they're not like at first actively booing somebody. It's just a whole bunch of people had the same reaction at the same time, and it ends up sounding like the whole crowd, or you know, it never really sounded to me like the whole crowd, but it suddenly sounds like, you know, people's disappointment suddenly sounds like pointed booing. And so did you get I wasn't in the arena. Did you get the feeling that it was a case of like people were mad at Myers-Leonard and they were like, stop, or they were just like, oh, that was so disappointing? Because it seemed that it sort of tapered off not long after it started as well. So maybe people like pulled back and were like, whoa, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tara. Yeah, the first part you said about you know, at stop at the jump shots, Myers, that type of vibe where I was sitting. It was that kind of night for the fans. They just did not want to see him play on the court, much less shoot. Granted, his numbers didn't really open up a lot. But he did some good things. He did set some good screens. He did make a jump shot in the second half. So that got the Blazers, you know, and their fans a little excited because it's like, finally, mm-hmm. we needed this sooner and we were able to pull through.
Yeah, one thing he's, I think, always been able to do, at least this year, is he has been able to set those screens. And he's been able to not only set one screen at a time, but he seems to have the ability to set a series of screens.
Yes.
When Nurkic came in, Nurkic really took on a lot of that, because, of course, he also took a lot of the minutes. But it seems to me with Nurkic out, Dame seems to be very quickly started struggling with his shooting. And I'm wondering if the part of the struggle with the shooting is that he's lost Nurkic's screens, Myers-Leonard minutes have gone down, and he hasn't been able to set as effective screens for Dame. And maybe that has contributed to Dame's shooting slump. Is that a theory that, you know, has any water or is way off base, or what do you think?
I think it's that kind of theory. If Myers has a good game setting screens and getting the proper spacing for Lillard or CJ for that matter, or even Alan Crabb, then there's going to be good games. And matter of fact, I really feel like there should be a stat line for screen set, pick set for Leonard, just because he is one of those guys that can do it. But if he comes off the wrong way or the wrong kind of spacing that Terry Stotts wants, then you're going to see the production go down, not just for Myers-Leonard, but all the perimeter players for the Blazers.
Yeah, and I really do think that I think that might have something to do with CJ and Dame, and whether or not it's they just don't have quite as much space, or they can't get into quite the same position as they were able to get in, you know, 10 games ago. I'm hoping that's something. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not sure it's a shooting slump so much as a positioning situation that they need to work out, you know, in practice. And like now we're at the part of time where they don't get practice. It's just like play, rest, play, rest, play, rest. So I hope that they can work it out. So at the beginning of or at the end of the third quarter last night, I was watching and I looked at the box score. At that time, CJ was 8 for 17, Dame was 5 for 17, and Crabb was 4 for 5. So I noticed that and tweeted out, I'm not the coach, but maybe try and get Crabb the ball some in the fourth. And it sounds like that was not a outrageous idea. And it sounds like that was something that everybody was like, yes, Crabb is shooting. He's going to let's get him the ball. And oh my gosh, was that exciting or what?
It was exciting. It was nice to see him bust out big time. He had, 25 points, 8 threes in the game, plus 13. And that's coming from, I feel, the true sixth man, if not the very best, in the Blazers bench right now. Don't forget, Evan Turner played a terrific game off the bench as well. He has some big shots in the game as well. And, Blazers went, 8 deep in the bench, and it worked very well to their liking.
You mean they had an 8-man rotation?
Yeah, 8-man rotation.
They kept it pretty tight last night.
Yeah, Crabb getting most of the bench minutes with 32. But overall, I thought the Blazers looked pretty good in the game, especially in that fourth quarter where they clamped down on Minnesota, not allowing Karl Anthony Towns or Wiggins to start heating up, which in that first half, it was just a flat-out brutal first half. Yeah, he had a great game individually, but unfortunately Blazers came out on top and got the W.
Every time I look at the screen, I just saw those bright green shoes. And I was just like, I am so tired of looking at those bright green shoes that Andrew Wiggins wears. I feel like I'm going to dream about them for the next month and a half.
I know. I mean, he's not a Boston Celtic number one. I guess it's part of his fashion statement or something.
I'm pretty sure that there is a story behind it, but I don't remember what it is because I thought about it the last time we played them. I was like, why is he wearing green shoes? Because it was right around when the Ducks were in the Final Four. And I was like, oh, is he a Duck?
Yes.
I like the shoes.
They just draw my eye and I can't look at anything else. Maybe he's doing that on purpose, trying to distract everybody.
I mean, I was a little distracted. It worked.
So, a question, you brought up that, Sean, that Crabb has been playing a nice six-man role this year. And that kind of brings up one of my questions is, who is the sixth man on this team? Because we have several guys, I think, who could, you know, between Crabbe and Turner. And then when Mo comes off the bench, he's critical. So who do you think should be our sixth man of the year?
Well, I don't think there's any question. I think Alan Crabbe should be the man, sixth man for the Trailblazers this year. Granted, yes, Blazers overpaid him a little bit. I think he's worth every cent of it. Yes, he had some early holes early in the year, just trying to find his groove, playing with Turner, who I thought early on was going to be the sixth man because he can play both ends of the floor pretty well, a better defender than Crabbe. But I feel for more of an offensive threat, being able to hit the three consistently, Crabbe has shown that he is not afraid to take shots. And I'm hoping for next year, and just saying for the future, that he continues to improve and not hesitate. He's probably the only guy off the bench that doesn't hesitate on a shot. He'll take it and make it 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, but a lot, definitely.
You get my point.
Yeah, but I agree. I would say he doesn't hesitate 9 times out of 10. But I think it's important what you bring up about hesitation, because here's what I think I've seen happening with the team this year is when they come out and they start right off and get immediately either behind or confused, or the defense doesn't click right from the beginning of the game, I find that makes them hesitate on offense. And I have no statistics to back that up, nothing to prove that. It's just something that I have picked up on in my own mind throughout the year, that if they aren't clicking immediately on defense, it makes them start to hesitate on offense, where they'll pass up shots. They'll make the extra pass, but I know sometimes it's important to take the extra pass, but I also know that sometimes you have somebody who can hit shots, but he passes it to somebody else who's not in a great position. What do you think about that theory?
I agree with you on that theory, Tara. One of the key guys that often hesitates one too many times, and God bless Mike Rice if he was still around with us, because I know he would cringe so much. But Myers Leonard, I mean, get it that the Blazers are an unselfish team. That's their identity when they're passing the ball. They want to make the right pass, but you need to be able to be a little selfish to make the open shot. If there's nobody well within 5 or 10 feet of you, you got to shoot. Don't pass it up to Lillard or McCollum. You shoot the ball. And that's what gets me with the Trailblazers in games some occasions. The inconsistency, the hesitation, it's not good. And that gets Terry Stotts, the head coach, upset. The lack of focus, the mentality of this team, it's so up and down. It's so streaky that it's not going through a straight line. It's not consistent.
Definitely feels like a roller coaster in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Ashley, sixth man for the Blazers. Who do you think? Do you agree that it's Alan Crabbe?
I can agree that it's Alan. If there was anyone that I would throw in there to maybe toss it up, I could kind of argue Mo. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I think it's okay to say that it's Alan as well.
You know, I actually lean towards Mo in some ways as well, and here's why. I think that one of the things that gets them back in focus and makes them stop hesitating and gives them the confidence they need for their offense to come back is somebody who comes in with just pure hustle on defense. And then I think what happens a lot is, they get in their heads when their defense doesn't come out strong. That affects their offense. And then it takes somebody to come in and go, okay, I am going to hustle and get this team back in it. And I think that's often Mo, whether or not it's a key rebound, whether or not it's a steal. I think his effort often when he enters the game often will turn the tide of the Blazers, like not being so worried about trying to focus anymore, because suddenly they get dialed in and they're no longer thinking, they're just reacting in their playing. I think that Crabbe comes in, and when he's on, he gives them instant offense, and that's great. But I think in my book, I would vote for Mo just because of that extra little bit of effort that's contagious when he comes in sometimes.
I'll also add in there, Tara, for Mo Harkless, yes, you bring up very good points with him. He's also, as you're saying, he's that hustle guy. He comes and plays off the bench, or you can start him.
Right.
It does not matter how you put him in. He can just fit.
Mm-hmm.
And he fits with the team's core, its values, very well. That way, you don't have the indecisiveness that this team has. And Harkless can just put it on the floor, take it to the basket, and occasionally make the outside shot.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point that especially with this team, it's kind of hard to identify a six man just because our rotation has been so different during different times of the year. And, you know, if you look at six man in terms of minutes played rather than who actually starts, that could be another way to look at it. Because somebody like Noah Vonleh, he clearly starts. He still doesn't play, as many minutes as the rest of the starters.
Right.
He as well. Like last night, I thought in last night's game against the Timberwolves, it was Noah going to the floor. That's a lot of man to jump to the floor to be hustling after plays. And I thought it was his play, kind of, I think it was either end of the third or at the beginning of the fourth, that really brought everybody back into focus. And we're like, okay, we can do this. We can win this. So I thought Vonleh had a good, was that spark for them last night.
Vonleh had a lob to the basket in that first on that first play, which really got the crowd going a little bit.
Oh, the very first play of the game?
Yeah.
I missed that because I was watching that TNT thing, and we were watching free throws for like 15 minutes before they switched it over. But I did see it in the replay, and that did look awesome. Okay, I thought last night's game was kind of a mirror of the season in terms of getting off to a rough start, kind of searching for identity. What are we doing in this game? How are we going to play? And then putting it all together at the end. And then finally looking like we're clicking for the most part at the end. So we're just unbelievably, we are just a couple games away from the end of the regular season. Did this season seem long or short to you two?
It kind of felt a little long. I don't know why I feel that way about it, but it just did. Just because with everything that's going around in the league, there's nothing that's really bringing the extra pizzazz, that extra flair to make it, you know, run straight through the season and all. It just felt very slow. Nothing really popping out.
How about you, Ashley?
Yeah, I think that it started off going by fast, typically how it does. Then it kind of lagged for me. Like, it was like, you know, you never want basketball season to end, but it was kind of, oh, another game. And then, of course, now, we have a couple more games left, so it flew by at this point. But I think that it had a long pause in the middle for me.
Right. I think, to me, that long pause was when the Blazers were really struggling. That made that middle part of the season, December, January, that seemed like pretty long. And it also seemed like there was a lot of time off in between games. And it just seemed like, this season we got plenty of time to get it back together. Let's do this. Okay, maybe not this game, next game. And then the next game would happen and be like, okay, maybe not this game, maybe next time, next game. And that just seemed to drag it out a little bit in the middle. But then, of course, we start hitting on all cylinders. We get Nurkic. Things change. I finally realize what a rim protecting center looks like because I could never picture it in my own mind because I hadn't seen one. And then, of course, things pick up steam. Blazers are doing great. And now that Nurkic is out, it seems like it's going by even faster and every moment is more important. Now, when you looked at what you thought about the Blazers at the beginning of the season versus the end of the season, what surprised y'all the most?
Ashley, you can go first on this.
I don't think it surprised me that much, but I could just see that it surprises a lot of people how hard they still try. Because a lot of people will tell them, you know, Blazers are terrible. They're not going to make the playoffs. Why would they even try? They're going to lose in the first round. But you never see them truly give up. And you haven't seen anyone turn their backs on each other's, or, you know, you don't hear about crazy fights in the locker room or drama within the team. So I think it might have surprised a lot of people that they still care. It didn't surprise me just because I know that's how the ship is run. I don't know. That's how, like, the leaders on the team, that's how they are. So I don't think I was really surprised about anything.
Well, I think that's a really great observation, though, because it could have happened at any time. Like, according to the regular narrative of the NBA, you know, there was always that opportunity could have come that, you know, they have the players-only meeting and they air the airing of the grievances or whatever. But that never came out like that. You know, it just was like, we don't know what's wrong. We're going to just keep playing through it.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, earlier in preseason, I literally thought this team was going to be really good. With Evan Turner, because of his defense and good shooting, I thought this team would just click from game one. But we know it didn't turn out to be that way. And they have somewhat regressed. And I think we need to take that into consideration. They have some losing streaks during the year. And there were some heartbreakers that they probably should have won and did not win. But here they are, Blazers in eighth place still, a game and a half ahead of Denver. And possibly, who knows, if Grizzlies lose out, they could get that seventh seed. But it's going to take a lot of luck to do that. But overall, Blazers, it's a little indecisive. I'm very surprised with what they've done, but at the same time, I'm not because of where we're at right now. But there's not been one time this year that I would say the Blazers would be quitters. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have lack of inconsistency, but they don't quit. And that's what I admire greatly of the Blazers.
So what about individual players? Were there any individual players that surprised y'all this year?
Yes, I'll go for this one. I'm going to put it on the book with the acquire of Yusuf Nurkic, just because I didn't know what he was going to bring. He was basically, to me, a prospect coming from the Mason Plumlee trade that shipped him to Denver, and I didn't know how well he would play. I tuned in to the last bit of the overtime game, I think it was, against Philadelphia. And he had a big-time game, and seeing the highlights of what Nurkic did, it mind-boggled me. I mean, I feel that man has really surprised a lot of people and has earned himself a lot of respect and love from the Trailblazers fans and the organization.
Yeah, I like how you put it that you really looked at him as a prospect. That's that hits the nail on the head of how I was thinking of him. I thought he was, you know, I thought that the draft pick was awesome and that this guy had some potential, but I wasn't prepared to see the immediate impact that he had on the team. How about you, Ashley? A player that surprised you this year?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I know it's pretty late, just because we got him so late, but Nurkic, he made like an immediate impact. And I was surprised just because, you know, you never know what you're going to get. You don't know what to expect, especially with such a player like him. He's young. You don't really have much on him. So for him to come to Portland and just, like, be so happy but hungry to play. And, I mean, like, obviously, Rip City fans, they love Blazers. They embrace everybody. They give everyone a chance. So I think that was really good for him because I think that's all he needed.
Mm-hmm. All he needed was the chance and the minutes and a place where he could get like a fresh start.
And the support, you know, from not only from his teammates, from the organization, but from the fans. I mean, it does matter to them.
Keep in mind that Nurkic was starting early for Denver this year until he was delegated to the bench as Nikola Jokic, mm-hmm. who, to all people, has had a great year all the way around. Nurkic needed to come to a different team, and Portland was the best place. And while some fans were a bit salty, if I'm appropriate with that, to see Plumlee go, I think it was the best move Neil O'Shea did this year to hopefully have Portland being in contention for a postseason berth. Without that trade, Portland would be bottom feeders in the Western Conference, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really want to know if, I mean, and there's no way of knowing, but I really want to know if the front office was expecting the immediate impact, like that Nurkic. I mean, obviously they thought that they were going to get a good player, but I wonder if they were like sitting there going, "I told you so," to all the fans, because yeah, he really did make it. And I think to your point, Ashley, about the fans embracing him. Yeah, I see what you mean. You know, when someone kind of falls out of favor, it's like, it's hard to get it back. And sometimes just a change of scenery is what you need. And we were there to be like, hey, we know, you know, things didn't work out.
Yeah.
Things weren't going great in Denver. So we are going to give you everything we got. We're going to put everything we got behind you to give you all the faith behind you that we can. And also coming to a team with somebody like Damian Lillard on it, which I think was really great for him, because one of the things about Denver, I think there's a lot of potential at Denver, but I don't really feel like they have an identity yet. And we have a really strong identity as, you know, a team that's built around CJ and Dame. Dame is the leader. You know, he's like the, you know, he's the guy on the team. But not only is he the player, but he's also, you know, the person who provides that extra moral support, who provides grounding, who's there for anybody for anything. And I think that was a really beneficial part of the move for Nurkic as well. I would be totally remiss, though, if I didn't talk about my player who was the total surprise, and everyone thinks that this is an odd choice. But for me, Aminu has just been one of my favorite parts about this year, because I realized this. I love chaos, and Aminu is chaotic, but like not necessarily in a bad way. But when he gets the ball, nobody knows what is going to happen except for him. And he just goes with confidence back and forth, dribbling that ball all over the place. And I just love watching him. And every time the ball goes down for him, I'm so excited, because people just don't think it's going to happen. And so he's made it a really fun thing to watch. And I really do think, and this sounds like it's tongue in cheek, but I partly mean it, I really do think the other teams don't know what's going to happen either. And so they don't quite know how to defend him. And then when it comes to defense, he's had some really exceptional blocks, steals, things that were timed. And again, those momentum changers that get people going. So I've come to enjoy Aminu this year in a way that I was not expecting.
I don't see any problem with Aminu. I mean, given the fact that he's got an unorthodox jump shot with a high arcing motion, it's like you hope in slow-mo it does go in. And he's been making the most of his opportunities all season, whether starting or coming off the bench.
Playing center?
He's up there. Yeah, he's having to play center on occasion, or power forward, even shooting forward. But he's been doing it great. Yes, I'll add that in there too, Tara. He has been terrific.
And I think a lot of it is because we haven't had Ed, and so that's given put more on Aminu's shoulders. But he's really handled it well. What do you think, Ashley?
Yeah, I like Aminu a lot. I think it's funny because I think last time we spoke, we talked about this a little bit because you were upset how. I mean, some people, I guess, in the league or the media who cover the league think that he's useless and, you know, you should be freaked out every time he touches the ball.
Zach Lowe.
I think he's so valuable.
I'm going to write a strongly worded email to Zach Lowe and ask and tell him what I think about him saying that he doesn't like Al-Farouq Aminu's pointy elbowed jump shot. But no, I think that's one of the things that makes the game enjoyable, makes the season fun, is when you see players, play outside of themselves or just play differently than expected. You know, I was thinking about it this morning, and some teams, I think, their seasons are just like a race, when you go to the amusement park and it's like a go-kart race and you just get in the go-kart and you just go and go and go and until you get to the finish line first. And that is like, you know, the team from the Bay Area, the teams who just, you know, even though they have injuries and have things that they that are risk to them presented throughout the season, they still just move charge straight forward ahead and they're just going to get there first. And then there's teams like the Blazers, and they're more like the, you know, the rickety old beloved roller coaster that, like, you know, intellectually got to be safe because otherwise they wouldn't let you jump on it. But in the back of your mind, like, oh man, this whole thing could just fall apart at any time. And that's kind of what I feel like watching the Blazers is. It's like, you know, we love it, but we know we're going to be in for a ride. There's going to be ups and downs, and it's not going to be a matter of just making it to the finish line. It's going to be like surviving till the end.
Yeah, I like that.
Let's move on to let's look at the future. And, you know, the Blazers have 3 draft picks, and we just got done with the NCAA tournament. There were a lot of people playing in the NCAA tournament that the Blazers might have their eye on. But before players even go to college, we know that they're playing in high school. And there's several showcase games for high school players, and one of them that happens right here in Portland every year, the Nike Hoop Summit. So, Ashley, I know that you have been covering it this year, and I would love to hear about what you are learning about some of the players who are now high school seniors getting ready to go into college who are going to be playing in the Nike Hoop Summit game this year.
Yeah. Well, this is my 3rd time covering this event, and it's one of my favorite events and the game. So basically, they practice all week. They play a game the end of the week. But the game is not even the best part. The best part is being at the practices, seeing these players, getting to know them, seeing how they work in that environment, but also speaking with them and just like getting to know them as people as well. So yeah, it's definitely my favorite event. It's been really fun this time around. And the game, so the game's actually tonight. It typically is on a Saturday afternoon before a Blazer game, but they decided to do it for a Friday night. So I'm excited to see the turnout tonight.
For the players who come in the, can you talk a little bit about what the format of the Hoop Summit is for people who don't know about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the USA Youth 19 Under team. So there's 12 players who are selected throughout the United States to represent the United States on this team, and a lot of them have been playing for a while, so they played on the 17s, the 15s, so they've been in the loop for a while. And then, of course, on the other side, it's the World Select Team, and, you know, it's teams, players from all over the country. And this year, it's kind of funny, there's 5 Canadian players. I was like, wow, look at this Canadian pipeline. Yeah, and the coach is from Canada as well, so... But yeah, there's from Canada, from Jamaica, from, let's see, to this year, Spain, Australia. So they're really all over. And
Lithuania.
Yeah, it changes every year. So it's really exciting. It really is.
So, Sean, I know that you call high school games, and I don't know if you've ever called a game that had a Hoop Summit-bound player in it, but I know that high school ball looks different from college ball, which looks different from NBA. What should people watch for when they're watching high school games? How is watching a high school game different than watching one of the higher-level games?
Well, high school games aren't televised except if it's for the state championship. That's one. 2, in terms of the Hoop Summit overall, you have the dynamics between the American style game versus the international based type game. And this is where it intertwines itself. Yeah, you're seeing the best high schoolers from one side, you know, compete for a championship for pride and everything. And the Hoop Summit, it's similar to the same thing, pride, but it's more for the scouts and for the people to see, you know, how these athletes are in terms of style. Are they going to be a post-up player? Are they going to be a pass-first big man? All that type of stuff. There's so many dynamics. It's also kind of fresh. It's one of the most interesting events that people are going to see every year in the Hoop Summit. No doubt about it.
So I got 2 follow-up questions. One, I think it's interesting what you say about how you're really seeing the scouts are looking and trying to figure out what kind of a style a player might develop in, because I hadn't really thought about the fact that, you know, players end up like in the NBA known as a specific style or whatever, but that had to start somewhere. And so it sounds like you're saying that, you know, in high school, this game is a chance for scouts to look at players and kind of determine this player looks like they might be built for it or have the, you know, the instincts for a certain type of play. And so the hoop sounds like a hoop summit is a good place to look for that kind of thing.
Correct. Yes, without a doubt. And it has to be.
I think the biggest. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, and it has to be in that right style for the player to fit into the college's system. Kentucky, Duke, the Pac-12, all those teams, no doubt.
What were you going to say, Ashley?
I think the biggest, a lot of people ask me, you know, what's the difference between high school and college and NBA? And I think the biggest difference is high school, it's more of a player-oriented play because you kind of get the players and then you have to work with who you have to get where you want to be, as opposed to college, is like you choose a college because the coach, because the team, because the style and the, I guess, just the brand and how they run everything. So that's the biggest difference for me when you just watch a raw high school team mm-hmm. as opposed to like a college team. It's a system and you know how it's going to be run.
So when you when they show up for the Nike Hoop Summit, though, they don't play together. So that's a little bit more of a opportunity to like see how they gel when they're not around their regular play right. with their regular players. That's an interesting distinction. I want to go back to one more thing that Sean said. When you talked about the American style versus the international style, I don't really know that much about the difference between those two different styles. So what should I watch for?
Well, for especially international, for what I watched in 2012, I believe, when I saw Sebastian Mohammed play and all those guys, granted they're USA, I get it, Wiggins and stuff, look for something that you don't see in American ball. And that's kind of like the flashiness, the passing for the point guards. They aren't the standard prototype American where they just, you know, bounce past a ball and that type of stuff. They take a little bit more flair into the game. That's my take on it. Like Ricky Rubio, of all people, you know, he's not there just to, you know, dribble a ball and pass. He likes to have a little bit of flair in there. And for the big man in the post, the centers or power forwards, look for them to spark up a variety of moves to elude the defenders in the paint, whether it be a fake with the right hand here or anything like that. It's very interesting to see the international players play in a unique way in their native land than it is in America.
Interesting. So there might be a little bit of flair to the international style.
Yes.
So I was looking at the alumni for the Nike Hoop Summit, and it looks like, and this is just, I mean, these are going to be the best of the best at the Hoop Summit. So if anyone's like on the fence about whether or not to go, these are going to be the top of, you know, the top of their class. And 189 former USA and World Select team members have been drafted by NBA teams. There were 11 players alone in the 2016 draft and 13 players in 2015. Mm-hmm. 10 Hoop Summit alumni have been chosen number one. So likely, well, I don't know. Is there anybody on, well, I guess, well, we're looking at high school players. So then they're going to have to still, the American teams will still have to go on and play 1 year. So it'll be 1 year more removed before they go into the draft. So, but yeah, 10 Hoop Summit alumni have been chosen number one.
Yeah. For the USA team. But then the world team, some of these guys are going to be in the draft this year.
Oh, true. Do you know any for sure yet, or are they able to say for sure yet on the world team?
Are they? Well, you know, you automatically know because some of them have already been playing professional overseas. So once you play professional overseas, you can't play NCAA.
Okay.
So some of them they might just, you know, continue to play that 1 more year, or some of them will declare for the draft. There's actually one guy, Isaiah Hermestein, and he's projected to be taken by the Blazers. So he had a lot of interest.
Isaiah Hermestein. Do you know where he's from? Is he from Germany or somewhere in Europe?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's from Germany. It's interesting because he actually was born in Eugene.
So he's like a hometown boy.
His dad played for University of Oregon. That's why.
Well, I'm going to go look him up.
He's 7'1", almost 250.
Holy Moses.
Yep. So
we'll watch for him.
He's an interesting one. He had a lot of buzz around him.
No, Ashley, you got to talk to some of the players as they were practicing and stuff leading up to the game. Who were some of the other players that you talked to, or who were some of the players that you talked to?
I've talked to a lot of them. So, of course, I had to talk to Michael Porter Jr. He's the number one player in the nation right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was committed to go to University of Washington. But unfortunately, Coach Rohrmauer was let go, and his dad actually happened to be on staff as the assistant. So they granted his release, and now he's actually going to Missouri.
And I believe he's originally from Missouri. Is that right? He's from the Midwest.
Yeah. Right? He moved to Washington for a year and is going right back.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he a senior this year? Yeah, he was a senior because he's going to Missouri next year. Is that correct?
Yeah. In order for you to be on the USA team, you have to be a senior.
Oh, okay.
Who else did I speak to? I mean, it's been everyone. One that I was really impressed with was Troy Brown Jr. Excuse me. He's actually going to University of Oregon next year.
Oh, okay. So, Troy Brown Jr.
Yeah, he's going to University of Oregon. He's from Vegas.
Sean, I know that you had looked over the roster. Any other players jump out to you?
A couple guys standing out. There are a couple. Jaren Jackson Jr., the son of former NBA forward Jaren Jackson, who won a title with the Spurs back in 99. We already know about Michael Porter. Gary Trent Jr., another former kind of alum from former Trailblazer Gary Trent Sr., who played 3 years with the Trailblazers. I'm interested to see how he will fare.
That's cool. Gary Trent's kids kind of play. That's cool. Now, remind me, did Gary Trent play point guard? Do I have that right?
He played mainly shooting guard, a hybrid, a power forward as well.
Okay, and what does his son play?
Yeah.
He plays guard. He's 6'6", listed, 205.
Gary's a guard. He's a really good shooter. Really good shooter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's going to Duke. Yesterday when I was walking into the gym, it was raining, so I'm trying to, you know, hustle, get inside. And there's this, you know, really tall guy walking next to me. And he's like, "Are you from here?" Because I knew my way around. And I was like, yeah. Are you just visiting? He's like, "Well, you know, I used to live here back in a couple of years ago." And I was like, "Oh, why'd you move away?" He's like, "Oh, I was just working here." I was like, "Interesting, you know?" And he's like, "Yeah, my son's actually here playing. It's Jaren Jack."
How funny.
I was like, "I feel dumb." I know who you are.
So that was, you were talking to Jaren Jackson Sr.?
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, I used to live here. It was a lot different back then."
That's like a, understatement. Yeah, I used to work here. Like, "Oh, really? Were you, you know, did you work out at this place?" That's funny. Well, I looked a little bit into the history of the Trailblazers at the Hoop Summit, and there's actually 22 current and former Blazers in the Hoop Summit. Can y'all name the four current Blazers who played at the Hoop Summit?
Let me think about who's on the roster.
I'm sure Aminu was in there.
That's one of them. Yes.
Who?
Al-Farouq
Aminu.
Yeah, Aminu. I want to say Ed.
Yeah, they played in the same year.
Yeah, Ed, Aminu.
So Noah Vonleh played?
Yeah, Noah, yeah.
And Myers Leonard was in it. Myers Leonard played.
Oh, yeah, Myers was.
Yeah, he played in the Hoop Summit with Will Barton. So they knew each other from the Hoop Summit. And so did Aminu and Davis. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about the NBA right now that's relevant to the Hoop Summit is, you know, sometimes you hear players who were around the league 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they complain about how all the players are friends now and how they all get along and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's because, you know, a lot of it is because of this system and because they've played each other. They didn't start playing each other in college. They actually started playing each other much earlier. And so now we have like a whole generation of players who are likely to have met each other multiple times on their way to the NBA. So like, why not have them, you know, be friends as well as competitors? That's like, I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive.
Right. Well, yeah, and you just see it. Like I said, a lot of them have been playing together for a long time. And even the world guys, a lot of them play in the U.S. now at U.S. high schools.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's so closely knit. And it's it's way closer than you think. Because you see the chemistry between the team, especially the U.S. team. You just see the chemistry. They're laughing. They're joking. Mm-hmm. They're having a good time. But it's like they've played together before, and they're going to see each other next year. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys are going to play together or play against each other. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and they'll probably even see each other later on this spring. Because aren't there a couple more other big name or, you know, big high school player showcases that happen? There's the Jordan Brand game. Has that already happened?
Or is
that
Yeah, we later? Still have the Jordan Brand Classic. Mm-hmm. A lot of these same guys will be selected for that.
So I had a quick other couple of random observations about the history of Trailblazers or former Trailblazers in the Hoop Summit. There's a former Trailblazer who holds the records for the most steals in the game for a world team player. So who do you think that might be? In 2007. So this in 2007, this former Blazer holds the record for the most steals in the game for a world team player with 4 steals. So your clues are a world team player, and he played in 2007. Sean, do you have a guess?
Oh, I've got nothing.
You said 2007.
Yeah.
Okay.
World team player.
World team.
Yeah. Think well, somebody we recently saw.
Departed, go to, I'm sure.
Yeah, recently went to a different team in the last 2 years.
All right, I'm pretty sure he's pretty long, pretty lanky. Mm-hmm. And I think he was drafted by Portland probably the next year or two. Mm-hmm. Would it be Batum?
You got it. Yep, he made 4 steals. He holds the record for world team player with 4 steals. Nicholas Batum in 2007. Let's see. Anybody want to take a guess at who some of the other players were who are not Blazers anymore, but who played in the Hoop Summit?
Who are not Blazers? Well,
or no longer Blazers.
No longer Blazers. Okay. Well, I can go back to 2000. There are 2 former Blazers who primarily played in the Jailblazer era. Can you name the 2?
In which game? Which year did they play?
2000.
Let's see. I think Zach Randolph was one of them.
Correct.
But Bonzi around that time?
No, he was in the league.
Oh, he was already playing at that time. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know who the other one is.
He's very controversial. Not to the point of Rasheed, but...
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't think Rasheed played in that.
No.
Okay, give me some more hints.
He's a forward. Shooting forward. He was drafted by the Clippers.
Oh. Drafted by the Clippers.
What did you say?
I said this player, along with Randolph, played in the year 2000 in the Nike Hoop Summit. Uh-huh. Randolph was one former Blazer... The other
Darius
was drafted.
Miles.
That is right, Miles. He also played. Yeah.
I have to admit, I looked that one up. I got
Randolph
that
had 24
off,
points.
But I didn't get Darius Miles.
Yep, Randolph had 24 points, and Miles had 15.
Wow.
Who had 20? Randolph had 24 points.
Yeah, 24 points. He shot 11 for 17.
Dang.
From the field.
That's
8
good.
Rebounds.
So of the current Blazers who played in the Hoop Summit, the high scorer was Al-Farouq Aminu. He played 19 minutes. He had 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, 1 block, and 1 steal. He had quite a night. He was very active in his 19 minutes. Noah played 9 minutes,
yeah.
No points, 1 rebound, 1 assist. Myers played 8 minutes, 3 points, 1 block. And Ed Davis played 15 minutes, 4 points, 5 rebounds.
Yeah.
Of the existing Blazers, Al-Farouq was the busiest.
I'm not surprised at the turnovers from Aminu. I will say that.
Yeah. Well, he takes chances. Well, anything else you want to add about the Hoop Summit before we sign off?
I would say, honestly, the best part of it so far was the U.S. team. They always scrimmage like a kind of put together team of local people, former players.
Oh, really?
And yesterday, Steve Blake was playing in it, and I was so impressed / missed him / we should sign him.
So he's back in town, and
he looked great.
Game. How fun! Anybody else you can remember who was there in that game?
Steve Blake, he was, I mean, obviously the biggest name one. Brandon Roy was in the gym watching because two of his players were playing, you know.
Oh, cool.
Let me think. Just local guys. Kamaka Hepa, he plays for Jefferson High School. Elijah Gonzalez, he was there. Roberto Gittins, just a bunch of local guys. It was really awesome to see. That's one of the best practices. It's so packed.
Mm-hmm. That sounds neat. So, I mean, it sounds like the Hoop Summit is really a summit. And when you want to talk about, like, it goes days long, there's lots of activities besides just the game. It's not just a game. It's about more than, you know, just the, what, however, 40 minutes that they play on the court. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you two for holding the fort down with me today in the absence of Joe. She will be back soon, but it is great to talk to the two of you. I appreciate all of the thoughts, insights, and inside stories that you brought today. Anybody want to add anything about the Blazers right now, or should we go ahead and just do your how people can find you and social media and find your work?
I'll close things off, Tara, with the fact that with, what, three games left in the regular season, Portland will make the playoffs.
You're putting it out there that the Blazers are going to make it.
Yes, they will make the eighth seed. I really don't see Memphis losing any games going forward, upcoming. I'd be shocked if they lose all three just so Portland can take the seventh seed and face the Spurs instead of the Warriors.
Yeah. How about you, Ashley? Do you think the Blazers are going to make it? They're going to hold on?
Yeah, I think the Blazers will make the playoffs. I don't see why they wouldn't. And they're playing so well right now. People are skeptical about them making the playoffs and losing out or whatever. But it's fun. You know what I mean? This is why they play. This is why we watch. So I hope they do make the playoffs, and I'll be right there at the game.
Awesome. Well, you two have convinced me that they will make the playoffs. I really don't know, and I don't think my heart can really stand it if I rely on it too much. But really, I just want more basketball. I'm not ready for the season to be over. And to me, it all comes down to we could possibly have at least four more games. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Well, once again, thanks you both for joining me. Can you tell people how they can where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at TheRealSLP on Twitter. That's all you can do.
All right, thanks. Ashley?
I have Twitter, Instagram, YouTube channel, Twitter at Williams Ashton. If you want to find my work, you can always look on YouTube, Ashley Williams as well.
I've been watching those videos that you produced from the Hoop Summit. They're really great, so I recommend people go check them out. And you can find me on Twitter at TCBBigs under Team Mom. And you can also, if you like this podcast, you can subscribe on Stitcher or iTunes, or you can find us on BlazersEdge.com, which is full of all kinds of up-to-date news and analysis about the Portland Trailblazers. So thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you later.